Before we dive in, if you find value in these honest conversations about parenting, please won't you take a moment to follow or to subscribe to the podcast? It is the easiest way for you to support the show and to make sure that you never miss an episode. And if you think someone you love could benefit from the chat today, please share it with them. It could just be the nudge that they need. In this episode of Sense by Meg Fora, we are joined by media personality and mom of twins, Zoe Brown, and of course, our resident twin care expert, Tasha Perrard, for an honest look at life with 12-week-old babies. We talk about night wakings and bottle battles, all the way through to balancing personalities and finding rhythm. In this episode, you will learn more about the realities of formula feeding, including how a bottle teat can make a real difference, and also how closely you should follow formula twin quantities. We also talk about how babies different temperaments and sensory profiles can already be picked up at this tender age. We talk about the truth about awake windows and also why rigid routines actually really don't work for all babies. We will also learn about what to expect at 12 weeks, from cooing and smiling and cat naps to the first signs of sibling interaction. So whether you are parenting twins or just trying to understand baby sleep and feeding rhythms, this episode is packed with wisdom, warmth, and practical tips for thriving through early parenthood. So tune in, don't go away.
Welcome to Sense by Meg Fora, the podcast that's brought to you by ParentSense, the app that takes guesswork out of parenting. If you're a new parent, then you are in good company. Your host, Meg Fora, is a well-known OT, infant specialist, and the author of 8 parenting books. Each week, we are going to spend time with new mums and dads just like you to chat about the week's wins, the challenges, and the questions of the moment. Subscribe to the podcast, download the ParentSense app, and catch Makia every week to make the most of that first year of your little one's life. And now, meet your host.
Welcome back, mums and dads. It is always wonderful to have you join us here each week as we explore and navigate the highs and lows of early parenting. And as you know, some weeks we have an expert who joins us, and some weeks we have a mum who joins us and takes us through her journey with questions for me. And today is a fabulous episode because we have one of both. Today we are joined again by our media personality and mum to twins, Zoe Brown. Welcome, Zoe.
Oh, Meg, it's so great to have these chats. I learn so much with each and every chat.
Yeah, and actually all the other mums do too, because these little ones go through exactly the same things at each age and stage. So thank you for sharing your journey with us. And alongside Zoe and I is Tasha Perrard, who is an incredible well baby nurse in Cape Town. She is a twin mum herself and has kind of carved out a little bit of a niche and a speciality of caring for mums of twins and helping them care for their babies. So Tasha, it's really awesome to have you join us here today.
Thank you. So lovely to be here again. I'm enjoying this being part of my regular monthly chats with you guys.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And it's lovely to hear kind of the progression as we go along. And one of the episodes dropped yesterday and I was having a good listen to it and just loved hearing the journey. At that point, they were 6 weeks old. Zoe, how old are they today?
We are 12 weeks old. Can you believe us? Oh, they are fast approaching that 3-month mark. And these boys could not be any more different. It's kind of laughable, but it's actually so sweet because that's what I always wanted when it came to twins. I was grateful they weren't identical. I always said I want to celebrate the individuality, and boy, are these kids individuals.
Totally different. I know I saw the most gorgeous little post that you did yesterday of them lying next to each other, and the one's lying absolutely dead still, and the other one's got his hand on the other one's hand and kind of scratching a bit. And I could just see the one has got all the movement and curiosity and social butterfly features, and the other one is just quiet and chilled. Is that what you're finding?
That is exactly it. And my little social one is the one that, weirdly enough, still loves to sleep a lot, whereas his brother, even though he's very chilled, he's starting to really show he's ready for longer awake windows. So I'm trying to juggle getting them to nap together, but now you can only resettle a baby so many times before you have to be like, okay, maybe we're not ready for a nap right now. And then weirdly enough, which I also quite find interesting, is when the one is really unsettled, the other one sleeps through the noise. So they don't wake each other up.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, which is wonderful. I mean, the last time we chatted, Zoe, your mum was here and you were chatting about what's the benefits of keeping them on the same schedule. But then actually you had the, well, not the luxury, it was amazing to have your mum there, and she took one for the night and you took the other one for the night. So that, because they were on slightly different schedules. Now that you're back by yourself, are you kind of getting them back onto the same schedule, or what's happening with the two of them now?
So what we realized with my mom being here was, in the mornings we would like have coffee and we'd catch up and we'd like, so how did your baby sleep last night? And she'll give me like, okay, he fed at this time and this time. And they were literally 20 minutes, if not, apart. So I kind of realize now that we're all under one roof and we're forcing each other to all sleep together, when the one gets fussy and I look at the time and I'm like, okay, they are ready for a feed, then I'll wake the other, because he would naturally have woken up 20 minutes later. But if the one is slightly unsettled and I'm like, oh guys, we can stretch it a little bit, I just pop the dummy in, and then we do get an extra hour or so. And then when the one fusses, the other one, when they both fuss, I'm like, okay, it's ready for the next midnight or in the middle of the night feed. But as far as feeds are going, we are still during the day, pretty much every three and a half hours they feed. But in the evenings, we've really been getting good stretches. So if we do the bed and bath time routine, every night slightly different, but it's generally between 6 and 8 p.m. Then their first feed will only be at 1, 2 in the morning. Wow. And then when we're up again.
Amazing.
So we are getting longer stretches at night, but during the day, it comes at a cost.
Very regular.
Naps are very short.
Yeah. And are you going to bed early? Are you forcing yourself to go to bed early so you can also have that long stretch at the beginning of the night?
It only benefits not too early, because I think it's for myself and my husband, it's just so wonderful when we do bed and bath early to have that time to connect and not have to do the baby dance, the bath dance. But then on the evenings where we do have dinner first and then wake them for their bath and bedtime routine, then we go to bed pretty much straight after they go to bed.
Wonderful. And then are they, when they're waking up in the night at one, do they feed and just kind of go back to sleep, or are they getting quite settled now?
They're very good with the evening feeds. We also do like only put the night light on. My husband is still very too chatty with them. We're like, no, we mustn't entertain them at this time. But they do settle quite quickly, which has been a blessing. So if I check the time, it takes us a good 30 minutes from waking up, feeding them, checking nappies, and then putting them down. There was one evening where the one woke up slightly earlier, and you know when you resettle and he just wouldn't settle, I was like, okay, I'll feed you. But his brother was sleeping so well, and I just thought to myself, oh, I'm not going to wake him, let's just see how it goes. And as I put the one down, the other one, and I was like, okay, well, I might as well feed you now so that we can stay on the same schedule. But without trying, they naturally have stayed pretty much on par with the same schedule.
Wonderful. That's so great. And it's so difficult. You said, you said to your husband not to kind of be too chatty. But I mean, it's so difficult not to interact in the middle of the night when they're looking so cute and they start smiling at you and they should be starting to kind of coo and almost chat at you. So it's very difficult to ignore that cuteness at 1 o'clock in the morning. Difficult not to interact when they're so sweet.
Yeah, no. I just said to him, like, because we each are in charge of a baby and we alternate each night. And I just said, if it's your baby, you need to get up, even though the cot's on my side of the bed.
Amazing. Sounds like you're navigating that amazingly. I mean, Tasha, I'm really interested just to go back to what Zoe first raised around the awake times. And, you know, you get kind of two different major theories, one around having a very strict routine for babies. So like the baby goes to sleep at exactly this time. And then, of course, you get your awake windows where you're watching those awake times, which is certainly what I do lean more towards. But those awake windows, when they were kind of put out, were very much almost like lines in the sand. Like every baby, it'll be about, for newborns, 15 minutes to an hour that they would then be awake for and then go back to sleep. But Zoe's talking about quite a variation, it sounds like, between the twins' awake times. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I know obviously it's got to do with their sensory personalities and how stimulated and overstimulated they're becoming. But what are your thoughts on that, Tasha? And how can Zoe navigate that for day sleeps?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a tricky one to navigate. The thing is, I remember when I had my twins, it was all about getting them to a routine. And I was reading a book called Gina Ford, and I was reading it and I thought, okay, my kids are going to, you know, follow this routine to a T. But I very quickly realized that both of them didn't follow that to a T. And it completely stressed me out because I kept on thinking, what am I doing wrong? Why is my baby, why are they not following the routine? Why are they not sticking into this kind of set routine of what they should be doing every day? And I quickly realized that, yeah, absolutely, every single baby has got different sleep kind of needs and sleep windows. So it's so much easier to, yeah, put the babies to sleep. And then once they wake up, you kind of look at the time and go, okay, right, this is the time now. Then this is we know that our babies can stay awake for 2 hours at a time, but it's tricky when the one wants to stay awake for 2 hours and the other one wants to stay awake for 2.5 hours. So it is navigating kind of that sweet spot, because it's so difficult to put a baby to sleep who's overtired, and it's so difficult to put a baby to sleep who is undertired. So you kind of got to mix the two, almost like a 15-minute window. You've got to experiment, you know, potentially bringing the one awake window a little bit 15 minutes earlier, the other one's pushed a little bit 15 minutes later, and you're just kind of experimenting every day and seeing what works. And also, I don't know if you've noticed that their awake windows are far longer at the end of the day than they are at the beginning of the day.
Yes, so I was just about to say that, Tasha.
Yeah, so I mean, always in the morning, I mean, they've, you know, they've slept kind of the longest at nighttime, and then they wake up, and then an hour later, they want to go back to sleep again.
Great.
And then at the end of the day, they can go, you know, potentially longer. 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, just to add to that, Zoe, I've had a look at the ParentSense app for your boys, because I keep their routine on my app, of course. And their wake time for this age is 60 to 80 minutes. So kind of an hour to an hour and a half would be right. And so exactly to Tasha's point, and I was going to mention that very often the morning wake time will actually be quite religiously an hour. And then towards the later part of the day, in fact, especially that last nap of the day, if they're going down at, let's say, 7 o'clock in the evening, as an example, you would actually subtract the 90 minutes, which would get us back to 5:30. And they would need to be awake at that time in order to have a good awake time just before they go to bed. And they'll cope well with that. So that's kind of, that's the way that I use awake time. So I would watch what time they wake in the morning, put them down. If it's before 12 p.m. midday, I'll put them down within an hour or about an hour after they've woken up. And then the afternoons stretch it to 80 minutes to an hour and a half. But having said that, even that with that variation, which is that kind of variation of the awake windows for morning and afternoon, we still definitely see a variation of sensory personalities. And I just wanted to check, is Jordan the one who's the more social and Luke's the little one who's a little bit more slow to warm up and quieter? Is that the way it works?
This episode is brought to us by ParentSense, the all-in-one baby and parenting app that helps you make the most of your baby's first year. Don't you wish someone would just tell you everything you need to know about caring for your baby? When to feed them, how to wean them, and why they won't sleep? ParentSense app is like having a baby expert on your phone guiding you to parent with confidence. Get a flexible routine, daily tips, and advice personalized for you and your little one. Download ParentSense app now from your app store and take the guesswork out of parenting.
Is Jordan the one who's the more social and Luke's the little one who's a little bit more slow to warm up and quieter? Is that the way it works?
The opposite away. The opposite around.
So Luke, okay.
Yes. So we, with our last episode, established that Luke is my sensory sensitive individual. And I've been very big on not overstimulating him. And he's the one that still loves to sleep a lot. So it's perfect because Jordan, he wakes up. So when he doesn't resettle and I look at the clock and it's maybe 50 minutes before they feed, I'll get him up, I'll entertain him a little bit, and then he tends to want to go sleep as soon as that bottle is done, whereas Luke is awake for a little bit, upright, and then he'll go down for his nap. So that's kind of how our awake windows are working, but I'm not finding the afternoons is actually when they give me the best sleep, and we have to wake them for bed and bath time, and the morning is when they're little cat nappers, and I try and get them to stretch or at least connect those sleep cycles. Some days I'm winning at it. Today was just one of those days where I'm like, I need more coffee. I'm going to need a glass of wine tonight.
Same. Do you find that for the cat naps in the morning, do they always wake up at a certain time? I mean, like, is it always at like 40 minutes or 35 minutes, or is it variable every day?
It's generally that I've noticed after they've, because they would wake up at about 6:30 for a bottle. And they don't make that 1 hour. So then they go down for a morning nap, and that's generally a shorter one because they'll feed again at about 9 o'clock. And that's kind of, I've just been focusing on the goalposts have been the feeds. So if they feed at 9, they're going to want to feed at 12. And then I kind of judge their naps on, okay, you've actually slept enough and it's not too long of a stretch until your next bottle. So then I'm happy to keep you awake because then they're not overtired.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what's interesting, you used a word there that's quite commonly thrown around, which is cat naps. Somebody mentioned the cat nap piece. And I think, you know, when you get very, very short sleeps, and sometimes, particularly with our more sensitive babies, we get like a 15 or 20 minute sleep and they're awake. Those ones, I do encourage moms to really work towards getting them to sleep a little longer. And the reason is that they're not really having a full sleep cycle then. So then we would work with things like white noise or deep pressure with a weighted blanket, or, you know, keeping the room absolutely dark. So, you know, all of those type of things. And then also even the patting to get them back into the next sleep cycle. But if it's kind of 40 minutes, which is quite classic, that is actually a sleep cycle for a little one. 45 minutes is a sleep cycle. And so you'll often have to work very hard if you want to try and get them back to sleep. So Zoe, when you talk about short sleeps, are you talking about that 40 minutes and more, or are you talking about less than 30 minutes?
It's 40 minutes or more. I think I'm just missing the longer naps they used to give me.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's such a classic thing that happens at this age, because we've got quite used to having them kind of sleeping for longer stretches. But actually, it's very typical that they only do 45 minutes for some of their sleeps. And actually, as they go from now until 6 months old, by the time they're 6 months old, they will only have one sleep a day that is actually longer than 45 minutes. It's very unusual that you get a baby who's having kind of an hour and a half and an hour and a half. It's more likely kind of a 45, an hour and a half, and then another 45 when they get to about 6 months. So they're going in the right direction. And I don't know, I mean, Tasha, you can give your input, but I don't know that I would be fighting to get them back to link those sleep cycles for more than one sleep a day. So if they're doing it for one sleep, that would is pretty typical. Tasha, would you agree?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, exactly. You're spot on. I think one kind of shorter nap in the morning, at least one long sleep in the day, and then a shorter nap in the afternoon. And I think a lot of people take that afternoon nap. A lot of people put their babies in a pram or a carrier. I find like the afternoon naps are more difficult to settle babies. So it's quite a nice time to put them in a pram and take them for a walk around the neighborhood, or put them in a carrier and take them for a walk. And then, then they'll kind of have that one last nap in the day.
And on that one, Tasha, I mean, a very good point there. You know, Zoe, we typically see that morning sleep, that hour after they've woken up in the morning, they will fall asleep relatively easy, which you are pointing out. Then they have this one sleep where they have this lovely linking of sleep cycles. And then that third one, exactly to Tasha's point, because it's a sleep that's actually going to be the first sleep to be dropped, which they drop a little bit closer to 9 months. That sleep, really, we don't worry about habits or about anything. We just say, just get it done. It doesn't matter. You know, for my little ones, sometimes I put them in the car on the way to kind of pick and pay in the late afternoon to do a shop, and I knew they would fall asleep on the way in the car, or I'd use it as my exercise time, putting them in the pram and walking around the block or into the carrier, because those are the ones where it really doesn't matter. Whereas the other ones, you do want to start to have some sort of sleep and consistent sleep space, because what we do find is that little ones who sleep well later on in life, so, you know, as they get towards the toddler years, you still have that nice midday sleep and a good bedtime routine. They're little ones who've had a fairly consistent sleep space for most of their sleeps, with the exception of that kind of late afternoon.
Yeah, I think a lot of people also ask me, like, should I wake my baby after sleeping? You know, everyone's so terrified to wake a sleeping baby. But I always, the one sleep that I do recommend waking from is that last afternoon sleep. And that's exactly what you're doing, Zoe. So you're saying you want them down at 7:30, and then I would definitely wake them by 5 so that, you know, because I mean, some people then wake their baby up at 6, and then they're just pushing the bedtime later and later and later. Mm-hmm. So even if they have a 20, 30 minute nap in the late afternoon as that last nap, I think just, yeah, don't feel bad about waking them from that late afternoon sleep so that you can set the cycle up for the bedtime routine. Like, such a huge difference.
That's lovely advice, Tasha. So I think let's talk a little bit now about their development, because 12 weeks old now, so that means that they are smiling regularly. Are they starting to coo or make any noises, or they're still not quite getting that well coordinated?
They are making the cutest little coo noises. My husband loves doing the little sound of ooh. And then Luke has been the quickest to mimic pursing his little lips like that and like trying to make the sound. And Jordan is getting there, but they just so like, I don't know what it is about dads. Like moms, it's probably because they're with moms most of the day, but the minute dads are there, they just like so fascinated with everything that dad does. But they are mimicking, they're trying to mimic him. It's very cute to see the little lips going that way. Jordan took forever to crack a smile, but now he's very generous with his smiles. And it's just so beautiful to see. They're starting to laugh, but it's that silent laugh. So there's no sounds coming out yet. So it's just these gummy smiles coming at us. Yeah. With you can see they're laughing, but there's no sounds.
And have they started to put their hands to their mouth and suck on their little hands?
Not too much, although Jordan is starting to drool. He is starting to bubbles, like blow bubbles. Luke is the one that has taken his hand to his mouth, but not really. Do you think the dummy is stopping them from doing that?
Well, look, they will definitely start to explore their hands more and more. And it often happens at around about this age. You'll probably find that tomorrow you find them with their hands in their mouth all the time. And it's quite interesting because often moms will say, oh, my goodness, my little ones has started teething because they've got their hands in their mouth. But in actual fact, it's just a developmental phase of starting to explore the haptic qualities, their touch qualities around their hands. And it's actually a very, very important milestone because we need to have a good awareness of our hands in order to have fine motor control. And we do that by actually popping them in the mouth because we're getting feedback from our mouth and our hands at the same time to the brain. And the brain goes, okay, I'm learning about this. So hand to mouth is very important from that perspective. And it's also very important from the perspective of self-soothing because they'll start to use their hands either around their face or their mouth or in their ear, even tugging their ears, just to be able to kind of soothe themselves a little bit. If the dummy is consistently in their mouth, yes, that potentially could stop that just because they're not needing to get their hands to their mouth for soothing. They're still in an age where I don't ever worry too much about dummies at this age. When they're older, kind of after a year, then I don't like dummies for awake times just because I think it can impact language. But I don't really have a problem with dummy use at this point. Tasha, what would you say in terms of dummy use at this point in their lives?
No, I mean, I talk with two hats here. So my mom hat is like, you keep that dummy for as long as you want to, because I know it makes such a huge difference. And then the lactation consultant sort of, we know that obviously dummies are not great for oral development. But, you know, at this age, for me, I don't feel like it interferes with anything at the moment. I mean, yes, definitely the older they get, you want to take it out for awake time. And obviously as they start talking, but it's amazing. So many parents now are so aware of that. I think so many parents are so terrified of, like the oral development, like poor oral development, and they're so much more aware. So it's, and also, you know, your baby will, once they need comforting, they need that dummy. It makes such a huge difference to them and to you. And to take that away is actually quite distressing for them. So, I mean, that suck reflex is such a huge comfort for them, really, I find, until the first 2 years of their life. But you definitely start to minimize it the older they get once they start talking. I mean, also in terms of exploring their little hands, I mean, the dummy is not going to be nearly as exciting as their little hands. So when they start exploring and they're kind of chewing and they're going to actually spit the dummy out because they're not actually looking for comfort. They're looking at, you know, they're looking for your exploration of what's happening with their little hands. And then eventually, you know, the older they get, then they start putting their feet in their hands and that's even more exciting so they can reach their feet in their mouths.
That's my favorite.
It's so cute. They're sucking on their little toes.
Yeah. So Zoe, we've only got a few minutes left with Tasha. Are there any questions that kind of have popped up over the course of the last couple of weeks that you've thought, oh, when I chat to Tasha, I definitely need to ask her this?
I would love to know, Tasha, especially from twins, when do they start almost recognizing each other? Because they're kind of coexisting in my mind. Luke will look at Jordan and it looks like he wants to like get a response. And Jordan's just like, it's like the cats. They just don't care about each other yet. I think I'm just more intrigued to figure out like, when will they actually realize there's two of them?
Yeah. I mean, I guess at the moment, you know, they're coming. So when do they turn 12 weeks?
They turned 12 weeks on Wednesday. So,
Yeah. So they're just 12 weeks. I mean, I guess you think about the first 12 weeks, we're still in that fourth trimester. So they're very much still kind of cocooning and, well, coming out of that now, but very much still, yeah, they kind of still feel like they're in the womb, I guess. So the older they get, I definitely find by about 4 months, they can definitely start interacting. It's quite fun to kind of start, you know, if one's lying down and getting the other one and kind of like pulling them towards them and taking them away and almost like start trying to play like peekaboo a little bit. But what's so lovely when they turn 6 months is that then they, well, a lot of babies start sitting independently. And then when they start sitting independently and actually facing each other and popping some toys in the middle of them and they start kind of playing together, that's, I find, when the more interaction starts, when they're actually facing each other more. But I mean, they're very much aware of each other. You know, you think they actually don't know a world really without each other. So Subconsciously, I think they're so aware of that other little presence next to them. So even though they're not interacting directly now, you'll definitely find kind of in the next couple of months, they start, definitely interacting a little bit more. Yeah. And it's so cute when that happens.
Amazing. Oh. Yeah.
I've got one more, if I can just take advantage of Tasha here for a second.
Yes.
With the bottles, we now exclusively formula feeding and we use the Avent, Philips Avent bottles and size teat 1 and 2. We've been bouncing between the two. And it was last week, I looked at these teats and I was like, oh, they are broken. So we changed the teats and we've now put the size 3 teats on, which is perfect for their age between 3 and 6 months. And I found that the babies aren't wasting as much because the milk would drip down their mouth. And I think we probably fed them with these broken teats a lot longer than before I realized it, how much milk they were wasting. And now that they're sucking from age-appropriate teats that are working, they have to work a little harder to get the milk. And I find that they're not finishing the 150 milliliters we would offer, to the point where I downgraded both of them to 120 mils. And it was only once Jordan was ready to finish his bottle and showed signs that he was ready for more that I now give him 150 mils, but Luke is still 120. Is that normal was it more wasting milk from the broken teats, or is it normal for them to kind of go through these fluctuations with the amount of milk they would drink?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess what I'm thinking is that if the flow of the milk was so fast with the broken teats, they might've been drinking more milk than they actually needed. So the milk was just coming out so fast that actually maybe they didn't need 150 mils. It was just that they were getting it so quickly. So maybe now actually with the appropriate size bottle, they're actually drinking exactly what they need. But do you think when a bottle is coming out so fast, you know, if the flow is just keeping on going, they're probably just drinking. Whereas with the 120, it's slower. And then they're actually realizing, oh, okay, gee, this is kind of enough now. My little tummy's full. I mean, how many feeds are they having in 24 hours then? So three hourly in the day and then actually only one at night. So is that six feeds? Is that sound right?
Let me quickly count. If we do a 6 a.m. feed, it's 6, 9, 12, 3, 6 will be the last one. And then one in the middle of the night. So 6 feeds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when you work out, what are their weights now?
I'm finding that out next week.
When last did you weigh them?
At their 6 week checkup. So I really do need to get them weighed with the move. We missed their 8 week check-in and I've got an appointment for next week Friday. Okay,
then you can find out.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's quite interesting because when you're a formula feeding mom, it can be quite easy to become hung up on the mils because if you're a breastfeeding mom, you can't be because you don't know what volumes it is. But when you bottle feeding it, you know, it does become about the volumes. And the stupid tin says, you know, six scoops, 180 mils or whatever it says. And so then you go, okay, well, that's it. That's how much the beet must be taking in. But the reality is that I think it works in the favor of the formula companies to have a bit of wastage because you go through the tin more quickly. And so, you know, at this age, the range of milk is actually quite wide. It's as low as 90 mils at some feeds and up to 180 mils at some feeds. So it's anywhere in that range. So if they're doing 150 mils, six feeds a day, and some feeds they do a little bit more and some feeds they waste a little bit, that is just absolutely spot on. And, you know, I think if a baby is consistently doing, I mean, let's say the tin is telling you to do 180 mils and they are consistently wasting 30 mils, I would actually make a little bit less. And then if they've finished a bottle ever in a feed completely, the next feed, just bump it up by one scoop, because otherwise you do end up wasting so much. But I think, you know, I mean, Kath McGaw, who I work with so closely, she's a pediatric dietitian. For us, it's a lot of what we've said with moms, and I know it's the same for you, Tasha, is to try not to be fixated on getting lots of calories, volume. Lots of volume, because it doesn't serve our babies well. It doesn't serve us well either. And actually, as much as the old historical kind of, you know, fat, chubby babies, a healthy baby has kind of been the way that people think about babies, in actual fact, fat babies are not necessarily the best thing for life, for their own health. And so, you know, if they're on the lower end, and if they, as long as they're gaining weight and they're not crossing lines on the weight graph, and as long as they are thriving and happy and sleeping, you know, you then it is actually less about the volume that they're taking in because they're thriving.
And we always say, I mean, it's applicable for when you start solids as well. You know, the parents, you're choosing what they're going to eat, but you're they are choosing how much they're going to eat. Absolutely. So you're in charge of what you're offering. So you're offering milk, but they are in charge of actually how much they're going to be drinking. And also those tin, the formula tins, it's so frustrating because, you know, babies are so variable. I mean, a baby, a newborn baby can be born at 2.5 kilograms or at 4.2 kilograms. Yes. So they're guiding you for on the age of the baby, but actually it's the weight of the baby. So
exactly,
the guidelines really have to be in relation to how much your baby weighs, not on the age of them.
Yeah, so true, Tasha. Well, Zoe, I think that's probably all we've got time for today. It has been absolutely fabulous to chat with you. Thank you for allowing us to be part of your journey and to actually help other moms with the little pieces of advice that Tasha can share with us. So thank you both so much. And I think when we see you in a few weeks' time, if it's going to be a month's time, you're going to probably be starting to think about whether or not solids are right. Not that we do start babies on solids that early, but we certainly do start to think about, I wonder what's going on in terms of nutrition. So I think that'll probably come up in our next conversation.
I'm looking forward to it. Great. Thank you so much, ladies.
Thanks, Zoe. Thanks, Tasha. All right.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks to everyone who joined us. We will see you the same time next week. Until then, download ParentSense app and take the guesswork out of parenting.